They have been referred to as Seattle's forgotten high school football team, but at their end-of-the-year banquet, the Cleveland High School Fighting Eagles were feeling anything but forgotten. Car Radio's Hannah Scott was there.
And Dave, we've talked about the Cleveland High School Fighting Eagles before and some of their struggles, including the fact that they don't have proper equipment, or in some cases any equipment, or food to eat before they take the field. The players got a huge surprise when they showed up for the school's first ever annual Talent Awards for Student Athletes banquet Wednesday night, and they saw Blitz and the Sea Gals, along with a handful of Seahawks players, including Deion Jordan, Tedrick Thompson, and Marcus Smith. But then a second surprise when Marcus Smith took to the stage for this announcement, making those struggles the Eagles face just a little easier.
On behalf of the Seattle Seahawks, we want to donate football equipment worth $20,000 to this football team. Yes, sir.
On top of the $20,000 check from the NFL Foundation grant that the Seahawks helped secure for that equipment, Safeway was also there to donate 250 cases of food for Cleveland's entire athletic program next year. All healthy food, by the way. Now, this all came together after Paul Johns, a former Seahawk who now heads up the Hawks youth sports program, heard about some of the struggles from the Cleveland coaches.
We found out that a lot of players, they don't eat before they go to practice, and they're performing tremendously without having food. And with some of the challenges they're having. So we want to be able to do what we can to make them feel better, let them know we appreciate what they're doing, and then give them some new stuff. That always makes you feel better when you have new things.
And actually, when I talked to him, he said, even the Seahawks, right? Even Russell Wilson gets super excited when he gets his new uniform.
New pair of sneakers, yeah.
New stuff is great. Cleveland football head coach Paul Arnold was overwhelmed, calling it one of the biggest things to ever happen to Cleveland High School.
When you have the Seahawks come into your place, there's no way in the world that you can feel like you don't matter. So that's just big there. And once again, just being able to have new equipment, have the latest equipment, have safe equipment is just so big, a morale boost and just confidence. And once again, it's just one more thing to show that our kids matter and that their hard work is paying off.
And a lot of the Cleveland players come from low-income families, and they don't always get enough to eat. So Coach Arnold says the healthy food donations from Safeway are huge.
You know, no budget covers food. You know, it's usually about equipment, things like that. So to have Safeway come in and make a donation to our program like that, one thing we don't have to worry about is how our kids are going to eat anymore. So just from a coach's standpoint, that's big. And then from a player standpoint as well. And not just that they donated, but the type of food they donate is going to be perfect fuel to help our athletes both on the field and in the classroom as well.
As for the Cleveland players, running back Truth Carradine says they were shocked to see the Seahawks.
When I found out about the Seahawks stuff, it was kind of surprising. You know, it's like a big, you know, push for our team and like motivation, you know, letting us know that, you know, there's people that still like support us and what we do.
And he says having that feeling of support is really a big deal for these players who really often feel very left behind.
It's always important to feel like you got some support because, I mean, without support, I mean, like, that's how most people give up. I mean, but if you got support, like a good system behind you or like a good team, good coach, good, you know, anybody behind you, you're always going to, you know, have that little extra push for, like, driving force. I mean, and that's going to always help you keep going.
And he's hoping that support gives the team the edge that they're going to need to get to the playoffs this next season.
Like the food that was given to us, the donation for all the sports, that's something like you know, that's really going to help Cleveland's push and, you know, take it to the next level. You know, now we got snacks, you know, keep people healthy, keep people, you know, not from getting all hungry, you know, keep people hydrated, stuff like that. We got, like, some money towards equipment, you know, new equipment for, you know, helping us with our performance.
And Coach Arnold has no doubt this is going to help his team both on and off the field.
When you get a morale boost like this to your program, there's no way that it can't carry over to the field. Our kids have an excitement right now I see that I haven't seen in them in a long time. And I know with having the Seahawks behind us and we're getting this donation for Safeway and really just shows our communities behind us. So I'm sure that's going to translate to the field. At this point, we feel like we're playing for more than ourselves now. We're playing for a community that's backing us. So.
And what about that field?
So, separately, right, when we first did this story last November, they didn't have a practice field, right? These guys are having to use another school's field to practice on, which they have to bus to. Or in one case, when I went out with them to one of their practices, they had to walk like 25 minutes to get to a soccer field. Doesn't even have the right markings on it to do their practice. But they still really played hard last year, almost made it to the playoffs. Anyway, I've been following up, talking with the city and the school district. They had told us last year when we did this story that this team was absolutely going to get a practice field in time for next school year, that it was going to break ground sometime this summer. I talked with them last month. They told me the permitting was done and they were putting bids out. They were waiting for one more bid. I talked to them last on May 8th. I have not got a response back in the last week, but there's a lot of red tape involved here. So we're staying on it. Really, the clock is ticking. They have to break ground by next month in order to get that field done in time.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like there's some movement on it.
There is. But nevertheless, though, the stuff from the Seahawks, these kids were stoked, man. They all got brought up on stage and really were surprised. They had no idea this was coming at this banquet. And this was the first time they even were able to have such a banquet. So it was very exciting. Really good night.
Hannah Scott, thanks, Hannah.
You bet.
This morning, it sounds like the peace process with North Korea isn't entirely dead. So let's talk with Face the Nation host Margaret Brennan.
Not dead yet, but certainly not chugging along. And whenever you have diplomacy come to a bit of a halt, that heightens the chance of conflict. That said, both North Korea and the White House have come out and said they're not done. They haven't exhausted the chances of talking. And in fact, President Trump, in that extraordinary letter he made public yesterday, said Kim Jong-un should call him if he changes his mind. Remember, just last week, U.S. diplomats stood up. North Korea simply did not show up at a meeting in Singapore meant to plan the summit. Mm-hmm. And they had stopped returning U.S. calls, essentially, from the Secretary of State. And so the White House decided this summit was headed for disaster. Let's call it off before it happens.
It's strange, though, because North Korea was playing nice. They returned the hostages. They blew up what was supposedly a nuclear test site. Why would they suddenly not show up?
That's the question that many are asking. The president has his own suspicions. He's made some of them public, saying that he thinks that this meeting that happened at the beginning of May between China's President Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un may have been a factor, suggesting there that the recent spike in tensions, trade tensions between the U.S. and China and some other issues may be contributing here, that maybe Beijing is trying to slow down progress with the U.S. on purpose. Of course, the other public thing is what North Korea has said upset them, which were the words from National Security Advisor John Bolton when he compared their plans for North Korea to what President Bush did in 2003 to disarm Libya. Years later, Muammar Gaddafi, that leader, was overthrown and killed. And so some of this may be rhetoric that's gotten out of hand, misunderstanding each other, but it certainly seems from the president's perspective that he thinks something else is interfering, and perhaps it's China.
So, I mean, what's the White House telling reporters that this is it definitely off, or is there still a possibility that come June 12th, the president flies to Singapore?
I have learned this far into covering the Trump administration, never say anything is definite. The president has always used that term, we'll see. Certainly, if you look at what needs to happen for a summit to be successful, the groundwork has not been laid, which is why the White House said, let's not do this June 12th, maybe in the future. But just even the logistics, the protocol, the planning, the things that need to happen to make sure the two leaders walk into the room and don't have a blow up, but actually have a conversation, that groundwork was not laid. And some of this is simply by virtue of how unusual this arrangement was. Usually these things happen quietly behind the scenes. Professional diplomats lay the groundwork so the boss can close the deal. That's not what happened here. President Trump engaged at the highest level here, which he was both criticized and credited with taking on the risk to do. Some have said this is basically a Hail Mary pass by the United States because all the other pathways haven't worked in the past. Jim Clapper, former director of national intelligence under the Obama administration, will be joining me Sunday. And while he has criticized the president on many, many fronts, on this one, he said it was the right call to take the risk and offer to meet.
One more thing. I saw on Politico that the head of the Border Patrol Union, which was a supporter of Trump's, has called this deployment of the National Guard a waste. What's behind that? Do you know?
I will tell you, immigration and the debate over it is bubbling up behind the scenes here on Capitol Hill. The Republican Party is really at war with itself, the moderates versus the conservatives within the party, on wanting to see some sort of immigration deal. And it's put Speaker Paul Ryan in a real awkward position. He doesn't want to move forward unless he has the full support of the party, and the party is divided among itself with any kind of legislation that has to do with Dreamers, those who came here as children, anything that has to do with funding the president's border wall and border guards. And so that is something that I think you'll be hearing more and more of as we get closer to those November races.
Margaret Brennan, the host of Face the Nation, and her guests on Sunday are going to be Senator Marco Rubio, Congressman Mark Meadows, and former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper. Imagine, if you will, a young, bright-eyed Han Solo. No idea he'd eventually help save the galaxy. No idea he would eventually spend time in prison in carbonite. Not even a clue that his best friend would be a giant space bear, or that the love of his life would be a space princess. Just a simple smuggler. It's called Solo, a Star Wars story, and Tom Tangney has seen it for himself and can tell us how timeless this classic will be.
And boring.
Boring.
That was my surprise reaction to this latest Star Wars offshoot. How this franchise could take everybody's favorite Star Wars character, Han Solo, and give him a boring origin story is beyond me, but there it is. And it's not just his story that's dull. His signature smart-aleck wit is also inexplicably missing in action. The film may be titled Solo, but it feels more like an ensemble movie, and oddly, most of the principal characters are more compelling than our hero, Han Solo. It's a bizarre experience for me to go into this and realize that he's much duller than he seems, at least in terms of his origin story. So maybe the point of this franchise is that he grew into being this really clever, witty, smart-aleck guy that we all love, you know, the roguish bad boy. But he certainly didn't start out that way.
Well, the problem is they had to get a different actor play him, right?
I know, that's true. In fact, there were a lot of rumors, trouble on the set. For instance, they had to replace the two directors that were doing the original and threw in Ron Howard right at the end to help save things, so people knew something was amiss. And then there are also rumors, and again, I haven't been able to verify this, but I've read it enough places that it might be true, that they delayed shooting for a while to give acting lessons to this young guy who's playing Han Solo. His name is Alden Ehrenreich. And the thing is, so a lot of people were sort of pointing the finger, oh, it must be that lousy actor that they got to replace him. I really don't think that's the problem. I think he's got the right kind of swagger down. He has that kind of a derring do. I blame the screenwriters for kind of stripping him of one of his sort of character, you know, signature aspects, which is his wit and charm. And none of that's there. And that's what I think is kind of surprising. The script just doesn't let the new Han Solo shine. It's hard to replace sort of an iconic actor and an iconic role like Harrison Ford and Han Solo. But again, I don't really blame the actor. I blame the writing. Here's a scene I want to kind of demonstrate this that I think was perfectly set up for some clever wordplay. You've got Solo challenging this equally charming and equally arrogant Lando Calrissian at a gaming table, by the way, played by Donald Glover. He's getting a lot of rave reviews. And this is the best the writers can come up with. Again, this is a scene between the two of them at a gambling table.
I heard you won your ship playing cards.
It's true.
Fastest in the galaxy.
But my ship isn't for everyone.
You got what it takes?
There's only one way to find out.
Whoa, 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 Hen.
Slow down. Might want to quit while you're ahead.
You might want to quit while you're behind.
Quit while you're behind is a punchline? Maybe the writers should have quit when they were behind and dropped the assignment altogether. That should have been one of the highlights there. I don't want to give the impression the movie's a complete and utter bust, Dave. The plentiful action scenes are done well enough to keep anybody awake. And there are a lot of little revelatory tidbits for Star Wars fans. You go, so that's how Han got his last name. So that's what the Millennium Falcon originally looked like. So that's how Solo and Chewbacca met.
But what, this is all being made up, though, right? I mean, was this part of the original plan of
No, it's being fleshed out.
Okay.
I mean, when you create... Now, remember, when this was concocted by George Lucas, he envisioned a 9-movie...
Right.
You know, he had big, big, big ambitions, but none of the details were fleshed out. Now the details are fleshed out, and there are... If you're... And who hasn't been following the Star Wars series? There are little bits and pieces. The weird thing for me is I think the best character in the movie is Chewbacca. The way their meet-cute scene happens too early in the movie to have much impact, but it really is... kind of fun, but that's probably not a good sign when Chewbacca is the best thing in the movie, purportedly about Han Solo. And then everybody else seems to be doing just fine work. Donald Glover's Lando is very good. Woody Harrelson's Beckett. Even the villain played by Paul Bettany seems more interesting than Solo. Now, Because the Star Wars movie, Solo is going to make a fortune at the box office, but it is projected to be the lowest opening yet for a Disney Star Wars film. Why is that? It's opening in the summer, which is rare. It's arriving only 5 months after the success of Last Jedi, and just a couple of weeks after a couple of other tentpole movies that have done very well, Infinity War and Deadpool 2. That's probably not that big a surprise if it's not boffo. And given its ho-hum quality, I think it's probably what it deserves, Dave.
Yeah, I'm remiss in not being completely up to date on the status of the 9-part series. So are all the 9 main parts done now?
No, they are still right now we're in the offshoot stuff.
Well, I know that. So this is a tangent.
Yes, this is like Rogue One was a tangent.
Shouldn't you finish the main ones before you go off on the tangents?
Well, that takes too long. Well,
you can't make billions of dollars on bad movies.
Oh, you're so cynical. This is being done for the in the cause of art. So how many of the main episodes are left to do?
Let me see. I have to go through that.
There's at least 6, right?
Yeah,
there's one more. There's one more.
Climactic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've already... No, the 6... Yeah, listen. The first 3 were pretty good. The third one is questionable. Then the next 3 came on, and they were mostly awful. And then they sort of abandoned, the George Lucas approach. And then they're now finishing up the third trilogy. But they've got all these offshoots. So we're
sounds like
the
typical transportation project in Seattle.
No,
yeah,
this one's
making
profit. The
first
3
though.
Are never good for transportation.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, the first 3 were great.
Yeah.
The second 3 were garbage.
Yes.
And the next 2 were okay.
Yeah,
but
no,
these offshoot
decent.
Ones, Rogue One was the only one that was good.
Oh, I see. So yeah, that's why they're holding off, because if they do the one more, then it's over.
Not hardly.
Yeah, we got the backstory movie on Jar Jar Binks coming out. Isn't that it?
That one hasn't been announced yet.
Thank goodness.
How many tangs for Han Solo?
I'll give it a ho-hum 2 out of 4.
Ho-hum. Thank you, Tom.
Your daily dose of kindness on this Friday. If a kid finds her or himself with a wad of cash from chores or allowance, most can't wait to spend it on a new toy, maybe a video game. Brecken Hayes in Indiana had been saving up for some new video games, but then his community food pantry put out the call. Their shelves were bare. They needed some help. Brecken's in 8th grade. He didn't need to concern himself with the plight of a food bank, but he did, and ended up donating his video game money. Get this, all $450 worth.
Whoa.
To that food pantry.
I don't really need those stuff. Those are wants. People need food and water to live, and they don't have that. And I already have it, so I don't want to be greedy. So I just wanted to help them.
And Brecken wasn't the only one who donated. WTHR-TV says he inspired other students to help raise a little more than $1,000 total for that food pantry.
And now at 7:47.
Dave's playing the air guitar.
I love that.
That was awesome.
Sports Insider brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers, and taking the long stroll across the Bonneville campus from the sports quad to the communications building, here he is, James Osborne. We've been talking about the increased number of home runs. They've been slowly rising every year. I had no idea that this is all wrapped up in some new conspiracy theory. So could you explain that to us,
yes,
please?
Yes, a big-time conspiracy theory. I'll give you the theory, and then I'll give you what happened.
Okay.
The theory is that Rob Manfred, the new commissioner of baseball, became the commissioner in 2015, came into the league and said, our ratings are not going the way that we want to. Our popularity of our sport is not where we want it to be. When it was at its greatest, we had home run chases.
Did he really say this? Was this picked up on his Alexa and sent to
ESPN?
Yes,
this was illegally wiretapped, okay. And so that's how... No, it's all conjecture, but this is the theory behind it, that the people like watching home runs, and so if I can find a way to increase home runs, that's what I should do. And because of that, there was a spike that happened right after he took over in home runs across the league, and it's continued ever since, in the 3 years since. So... people have wondered why in the world would all of a sudden this dramatic change in home runs happen. Nothing in the parameters of baseball has changed. Well, it turns out that the balls actually have been changed. They have changed the way that they manufacture the balls. Now, there's a lot of wondering of what actually did change, but they did. MLB released a commission to go study this, and they determined that, yes, the balls have in fact changed. right around that time.
But then I'm reading an article that says scientists looked into, are the stitches lower? Are the baseballs more aerodynamic? And they found no evidence of that.
Yeah, so a couple of the things that they found out that I was reading was, one, that there might have been a change in the actual surface texture of the ball, which can reduce drag, which means that when the ball's flying through the air, it's not as affected by the different weather conditions or wind conditions, air conditions, etc.
But wouldn't that also affect the way the pitcher is gripping the ball, so it would have a negative effect on the pitcher?
Well, that's another part of this, too, is there's been a rise in blisters on pitcher's hands, and a lot of people have believed that this is due to the change in the texture of the ball as well. Another theory that has been put out that they've been looking into is whether or not they're winding the core of the baseball, because there are several elements inside a baseball, that they're winding the wires around the core in a tighter and more symmetrical fashion to, again, reduce drag when the ball flies through the air.
This is incredible.
I thought the baseballs were manufactured by a special company staffed by magical gnomes who work in an isolation chamber so that there can be no tampering.
Yeah, it's a co-shared elf facility that Santa uses as well in the off-season.
So do you buy all of this, or do you have your own theory?
No, I really do. I do think that Rob Manfred looked at this game and said, we were the most popular when Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were chasing home run titles. And if we can find more of that, if we can get that back, that's the way we can capture national attention away from the NFL.
And remind me, I don't want to smear anybody's name, but were any of these home run heavy hitters accused of using it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
every single one
maybe
of them.
It's the drugs. I don't know.
That's true. But I think that their hope in this is that, generally speaking, the most exciting play in baseball is a home run. And if we have more players hitting home runs, we're having more exciting plays in every city and every
game. I would
say
the Grand Slam is more exciting than the home run.
True. But also home runs.
I know, which includes a home run. I know. I know.
Why couldn't it be?
It's a joke. Jeez.
I get it. But why couldn't it be global warming? Because warmer air is lighter.
Yes. It's a great question. It is something that the commission studied, and they did not find a correlation in testing different weather effects, different weather data. MLB has a statistics group that called StatCast. It measures all sorts of different analytics on every ball that's pitched, hit, and caught. Every single one. And they use that. So this is hundreds of thousands of data points that they measure over the course of years. I believe they started using StatCast in 2013 or 2014. So they've looked at all of these balls over the course of that time and then determined some statistical correlations based on that, based on weather conditions, et cetera.
They could have used a grand slam in the first inning yesterday. Nelson
Amen
Cruz
to that.
Is up, and unfortunately it didn't work out because they lost, and once again, it was Felix pitching. What do you think? We haven't examined you on the whole Felix issue. What do you think?
Yeah, Felix has had a really tough time with the first inning this season. If you look into his stats, the first inning is by far his worst inning of every start that he's had so far.
Why do you think that is?
You know, I wonder that he's trying to be more economical with his pitches. Economical or economic? What's the right word for that?
Economical. Yeah.
Either way, he's trying to be more efficient with his pitches. And so he's trying to throw strikes earlier on in the game so he can last longer. Because typically he's only going to throw between 100 and 120 pitches. So if he throws strikes early, they either swing and put it in play, or he's going to strike guys out. And because of that, teams are starting to scout that and say, well, we can hit this guy in the first inning because he's going to throw it right down the middle to try and get easy strikes.
Do most pitchers do that? I feel like if you're going to save your physical self for the sake of yourself rather than play hard, win the game, go all the way through, and maybe you putter out early, that would be a better strategy, or at least an athlete's mindset.
Yeah, I mean, it really, really depends. Felix knows, and he's been at this game for so long, that the longer he goes into the game, the more efficient and effective he gets. He just gets in a rhythm and a groove. So if he can really get there quickly, I mean, even in last night's game or yesterday's game, after the first inning, they really didn't touch him at all. So he knows if he can get through and then he can get himself to the seventh, eighth inning, get to less receivers or less relievers in the game, that's helpful for the team.
Should he then throw more warm-ups before taking the field?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that simple, but I think for the Mariners, at this point, anything's on the table to try and fix that.
Coach Ross, I mean, come
I'm
on.
I'm just asking the question.
No, it's good. Sometimes you need an outsider's
perspective. I have no
idea
what I'm talking about when it comes to sports.
Sometimes the best coaches are those that, you know,
yeah,
have less experience and can offer an outsider perspective.
Thank you for that, Colleen.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be supportive.
Chris is noticeably silent, though.
I know, but he's over there just bouncing in his chair waiting to weigh in.
No, but I would, but I just want to go back to the home run thing because I know everybody shows up to parks to see the drag bunt. That's
what
really
now?
What people show up for.
That would take a whole nother 5 minutes to explain.
Yeah, I know. Can we do that?
Again, let's just say it's a really boring play, a dumb play in baseball, even though efficient and well done and works well.
Bunt.
Home runs are where it's at, baby.
That's a differently dressed player who holds the bat steady.
Thank you.
Never mind.
Did you?
Thank you, James.
It's quickly going downhill.
Our Sports Insider brought to you by your Western Washington.
Go share that one on sports radio. See how it goes.
I will. Seattle's Morning News. Good to have you tuned in. The mayor of Seattle, Jenny Durkin, just announced a proposed ordinance. Let's just go over it briefly here. It requires the safe storage of a firearm. It shall be a civil infraction for any person to store or keep any firearm in any premises unless such weapon is secured in a locked container, properly engaged so as to render such weapon inaccessible or unusable to any person other than the owner or legally authorized owner. And the penalty, if your gun is used for a suicide or in connection with a crime, is up to $10,000. Civil infraction, they can't lock you up, so it's just like a really expensive traffic ticket. Todd Herman is here from KTTH. You're filling in for Rush today, right?
Filling in for Rush in about 13 minutes, yeah.
About 13 minutes. Yeah. So I wanted to get your take on this. You're probably not a fan.
Well, I'm really glad to see that they've extended this to heroin to make sure heroin doesn't make it into the hands of kids, into their veins, and they've extended it to marijuana and cars, which, of course, go out and kill people, and liquor cabinets so the teens know you get drunk and go make these mistakes. I'm glad that they've gone all in on public safety, having respect for things that kill more people than guns. But, yeah, I'm not a big fan.
Right, but on this, if you're looking for a way to stop irresponsible people from letting their guns fall into the wrong hands, why not do this?
Well, A, how do you enforce it?
Well, you enforce it after a crime is committed. You go back, you check how the gun was stored, and if it was improperly stored or was stolen, et cetera, then you slap the person with the fine as a deterrent to the next guy.
Oh, I see. So we're making examples of people. Look, people should secure their firearms. If you own a gun and you haven't yet invested in a trigger lock or a safe, you're being stupid and you're being irresponsible. But here's the thing, Dave. I keep next to my bed, I keep a Glock 19.9. And I keep a tactical shotgun in a backup position. Now, I'll never need those. It's never going to come a day where I need those. But I prefer to have them and not need them the reverse. I'm not going to lock up my gun and take the ammo out because Jenny Durkin tells me I need to. Because when the bad guys break in, if God forbid that ever happens again, someone tried to break into our house in South Park and it helped when I pointed the red dot at his chest. He stopped, really, and turned around and went away. I don't get to call time out and say, hey, let me get to the gun safe and unlock the trigger lock and
I get why you would do that, but if somebody were to steal, well, how would you feel if somebody, for some strange reason, broke the combination to your safe or whatever it is you do and took the gun and went out and shot up a Waffle House?
If someone went in and broke into my safe and spent the 2 hours necessary or three it would take to break into my safe, I would be furious at them. I would be furious at the so-called King County prosecutor, Dan Satterberg, who refuses to put criminals in jail. I wouldn't feel the least bit guilty, any more guilty than if someone took
and
my car
under this,
and
you
ran
wouldn't
over someone.
Because locking it up in a safe would qualify as a positive defense in the case. So this would only kick in if you had left them out and loaded and accessible.
All right. So when I'm asleep at night, I need to put my guns in safe to not run afoul of this diktat. Nah, I'm not going to do it.
No, you don't. You don't. As long as nobody gets them and uses them in a crime, they're not going to come after you. They're not going to inspect your house.
So if I can kind of explain why anti-gun people don't make any traction with us, more people die in drunk driving. There's no laws like this for liquor cabinets. More people die in swimming pools. There's no law like this for swimming pools. This is not about preventing deaths. This is about making it difficult for gun owners. If we're really going to talk about preventing teen deaths, then let's make an example of someone whose kid got into their liquor cabinet or whose kid got into their heroin collection or whose kid went and drove their car drunk. Let's make those make those examples
as well.
We can
do that too. But in the meantime, it's like it hardly ever happens that an engine blows apart and sucks somebody out the window, right? So I guess by that logic, we shouldn't even bother to reinspect those planes and make sure that doesn't happen, because that's very rare. It hardly ever happens.
Yeah, I would think that is about as tortured an example as you could provide, and you're better than that. I would point out the fact that the Bill of Rights around our Second Amendment is there for a reason, and it's to stop unreasonable limits on this. It is unreasonable for me, if I'm asleep in the bed, and let's say someone breaks in while I'm asleep, my family's not there. They come and they take my weapon and they run away and they go shoot someone you said at a Waffle House.
Yeah.
I'm not responsible for that. That has nothing to do with me. I went to the bathroom and my weapon was there. Am I to take it with me? Both of them? No, I'm sorry. I don't think this is. I don't think this is. It's good. But let me offer a solution.
Please do.
All right, let's reach some common ground. How about this?
Yes.
More tax rebates for gun stores who make gun safes available, who preach gun safes for manufacturers.
You change
who
the culture,
them.
You mean?
Yeah, so that we. I don't think we're changing the culture. First of all, I think this survey they did is a joke. I don't. I on my show, I asked gun owners how many lock them up in safes. I got a couple hundred responses. One person said he could not afford a safe, and so he uses a trigger lock. Mm-hmm. But yes, I say, let's make this more available for people who don't have it. Let's educate. But in my culture, Dave, and the people I hang around with who shoot, I don't know anybody who doesn't lock up their guns because we don't want them stolen.
But
they're
64% don't, apparently.
Well, I would love to see the internals of that poll because yeah. I don't believe it. I don't believe it for a second.
So just to make it clear, it is the responsible way to handle your firearms if you're not going to be near them. Is to secure
you
that.
Better. I tell you what, if you bought guns and they're under the mattress or they're up high in your house, you're a fool. You're a fool. Because burglars know where to look and kids are going to look around. You stop that. You lock your guns up or you get a trigger lock. Okay? If they're on your person, that's another thing. On your bedstand, that's another thing. But you are responsible for you. Do not be part of the problem, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate your time.
Todd Herman from KTTH.